Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey friends, if you are into sex positivity, which I assume you are since you're listening now, there's a couple really great opportunities for us to hang out and talk about sex. One of them is DTF, the Daryl and Timmery Fun Hour, which is a combination of sexuality education, comedy, game show. It is a live thing that happens in Philadelphia on the second Friday of every month at the Philly Improv Theater. Along with comedian Daryl Charles, we put together an incredible show every month that features different guests who are either sexuality professionals and comedians, and it's just all sorts of ridiculous. It's BYO, so take that for what it is, so you get a sense of what's going to happen. So DTF, Second Fridays, Philly Improv Theater, that's one option. The other one is that in May, in honor of Masturbation Month, which is a thing, SexX Interactive, a three-day-long sex-positive multifaceted conference is going to be taking place. This is a first of its kind sort of thing. There are definitely academic conferences devoted to sexuality. There are definitely fun play parties people can go to. But this is a merger of interactive workshops, live performances, how-tos, academic lectures. It is so many things, including comedy show, dance party. You can register now. And you have lots of options for student pricing, opportunities for volunteering. So if your budget is not allowing for the regular pricing, you have other choices. And you can definitely hit us up through the sexxinteractive.com website. So that's sex, an extra X, interactive.com. There's also a Facebook presence, which is facebook.com/interactivephl. Because you can't say sex on Facebook. So check out that conference coming up in May in Philadelphia. Thanks, and I hope to see you there. Welcome to Sex with Timmery. This is Dr. Timmery. I am very excited. I'm gonna give you slightly sexier voice than usual. In honor of today's guest, who is a repeat offender. She's been on the show before. It was a great episode. It was wonderful. And so we are super happy to have back Cameron Moore. How are you?
I am doing so well. Thank you. I'm doing really well. It's great to be back.
So you are about to embark on an epic tour. Tell the nice people, what are you going to go do?
Well, yeah, it is pretty epic. It is fucking epic when you consider how much baggage I have to carry around. I'm kind of my own one-woman theater company. I have solo shows. I write my own works and perform them in fringe festivals mostly. Fringe festivals are pretty common in Canada. There's some in the U.S. as well. In the U.K., you can't even step 5 feet without stepping on one. So I take my plays. They're all sexually themed, I guess you would say, and tour to festivals. So this year I'm returning for the third year to the UK and performing my shows Phone Whore and Slut Revolution at festivals all over the UK, like 12 different stops for 4.5 months. And that's epic. I'm sorry. Like, it's just me on the train with my shit, and the train conductors look at me like I'm moving house every single time, but that's what you do when you care about your work.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know if you can answer this question, but like for me, a British accent is a little bit of a panty dropper. You go over there with the Canadian accent. Does it do the same thing?
So let me just correct you. I'm actually not Canadian. I live in Canada a lot.
Okay.
I've been living in Montreal. People confuse that often. It's fine. I'm actually from the U.S. But the North American accent, like the British folks don't distinguish between Canadian and U.S. accents. I did get a lot of comments on that, actually. It was a strange sort of readjustment for me to be thinking, oh, wait, I'm the one with the exotic accent. And it's not that exotic because, of course, they get a lot more American TV than we get British TV. So it's not, maybe their ear is a little more used to it, but I still get lots of comments on it. And I even have one little boy like kind of pull away from his mother in a store and say like, I really like your accent. And like, that's not panty dropping. That's a 10-year-old boy. But still, it was striking enough for him to notice. And it is a very strange like shift in perspective to be suddenly like, they're all speaking such beautiful British accents, foreign accents. Like, no, over here, I'm the one with the accent.
But it's like there's the foreign element of it that is just like the novelty, the exoticism. But at the same time, like every time I've ever heard someone who was from the UK do an impression of a North American English, you know, like Canadian or American accent, it didn't seem like they were complimenting us.
No, there is that thing, right? There is that.
A Northerner does a Southern accent, it doesn't seem like we're being complimentary.
No, it's the East Coast. I think they're looking at like the New York, the Jersey, the kind of the running, loud, brash, running over people, other people in the conversation. And the terrible truth is, I do that. But at least to my face, they like it. You know, maybe they turn away and they mutter to each other, oh, she's, you know, gross. But to my face, they seem to enjoy it. So I'm not too worried about it.
And you have like a pretty significant audience over there. But specifically, you're talking about your experience doing phone sex work for a lot of it, right? So your voice and your accent are like a pretty significant piece of your work.
Yeah. So the way that we're talking now, I'm definitely not doing like a phone sex voice. There are very few of my customers that I would actually talk this quickly to, that I would go ahead and be that loud, brash thing, because that's for most people, for a few people, that would this voice actually be the turn on. Normally, when I'm doing phone sex, I slow down a little bit and mellow things out. So what people see over there in the play is they get me being brash and like talking between my phone calls, and then I, in Phone Whore, they're in the position of eavesdropping on four different phone calls that I might take, and in those cases I am doing my phone sex voice more. People ask me, what's your phone sex voice? They want me to do it on demand. That's the part that bothers me. They want like a demo of what I sound like when I'm doing phone sex, and I either say like no or come to my play, you know, because I don't even know. There's no one phone sex voice. It depends on who I'm talking to.
So you're catering your like cadence and your tone to like their fantasy.
It's partly keeping in mind their fantasy. So my mommy voice is going to be quite different from my dominatrix voice, is going to be quite different from my frightened little teenage girl voice, which I don't do very often because it's not my natural register. But there's also that thing, and I'm sure many people do this consciously or not, is when you're having a conversation with someone, to make it go smoothly, we tend to modulate our voices to match theirs. Their pacing, their sometimes their accents even. When you want to get along with someone, you, both in body language and in verbal language, you tend to match. You kind of, everyone shifts to meet in the middle somehow. So a lot of my work is I have to find what mood these guys are in, what kind of horny are they, and then go there. And so there's no one voice that I pull out for every occasion. It's like, well, are they on coke right now and talking really fast? Or am I their mommy? You know, it's very, very customized.
And do you know going into the conversation what they're looking for, or do you just come with some sort of neutral tone that you can then adapt as you're discussing it with them?
That also varies. Sometimes I get some information from the dispatcher. I work for a company and they have, it's like a dispatch model. So sometimes I get details from them. By now I have a foot long index card box with index cards in it for my customers. So unless it's an entirely new to me customer, I have the records and I can look and see what it is they go for, and I can drop into that right away if that's the way that they like it. There's one guy, a regular of mine, who recently has been on this sort of fake Slavic, like Russian intrigue jag, where he's like a factory owner and I'm one of the women on the floor of this factory, and he calls me into his office. And when he starts his call and I hear him in that terrible Russian accent of his, that's my cue. Like, there's no, that I gotta go to that accent, right? There are other callers who maybe we chit-chat a little bit in a normal tone, and then we talk about what we're talking about, and then I segue into that. It really depends on the customer.
When you started doing phone sex in general, did you already have, like, a pretty big repertoire of vocal performance? Did you have accents? Did you have, like, experience as a voice actor?
No, not at all. I had been told for years, right, that I had a good voice. I should do phone sex, but what kind of performance skills did I have at that point? I had done burlesque before. I had done some little bit of community theater, kind of directing, choreography, and performing that way. I am not a formally trained actor, so I don't have any voiceover. I didn't have any voiceover experience, and I mean, the one thing I brought to the table was being a pervert.
That helps. That definitely helps.
So a fairly open mind from the get-go. And I'm also an extrovert, which helps. So I'm used to starting conversations with people, having conversations, talking awkwardly about sex with people and making it less awkward. So those are all things. But in terms of the more actorly side of phone sex, I did not have that experience.
I had a conversation with somebody this weekend. This is sort of a departure, but it's someone who said, it's someone who's working as an artist. And when you decide to go into a field like that, like you're making the decision to do what you love rather than to necessarily always be financially stable. Hopefully you can find a way to do both. But he was just like, yeah, I'm just like done listening to people talk about how they hate their jobs. Like, I'm just done. Like, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. I tend to agree. I mean, I understand that not everybody has, like, an artistic skill. And I think that also is, like, an incredible privilege to happen to be really good at something. Because it sounds like you were able to train yourself, which is not something that most people could do.
Right. And both in phone work and in the theatrical work that I do, I mean, I've always been a good writer, but in terms of finding my voice, I feel like I found it pretty quickly. And I also knew where to go in terms of like the fringe circuit, you know, the fringe festival circuit. I knew where my shit would fly, basically. So I have a lot of, like, sometimes I stress out a lot about the financial instability of both phone sex work and theatrical work, but somehow those waves, those peaks and troughs, like manage to align in such a way that I rarely am really clinging by my fingernails, you know? So, it's a privilege to be able to like most aspects of what you do. And I'm always very conscious of that, for sure.
I remember last time we had a conversation about, have you had customers and conversations that made you not love it? That were times when it felt like, yep, this is definitely a J-O-B. Now that you're more established, does it happen less often? Do you have more freedom to, like, make those situations, you know, rarer? Like, how is it now that you've been doing this for a while?
I still don't get to choose to pick and choose my customers. Like, that's never going to be something that I get to do as long as I work for another person, like for a company, you know? What has happened, oddly, is that my boss has like, I keep her posted on, obviously, I let her know that I'm touring, and she is very generous with giving me time off, but she's starting to become curious, because it's not like a one-off thing. This is now every year I go on tour somewhere, and she's starting to become curious, like, and excited for me, and so she's starting to, I don't know, like, I need any, like, legitimacy in her eyes, but what's happening is that I've stuck with her for almost 6 years, and she is letting me sometimes say, you know, I don't want to take that guy tonight. She'll say, it's so-and-so, it's for a nickname, Extreme Top, he's calling, and I'll be like, oh, God. And she's like, you don't have to take him, I can tell him I couldn't reach you. So she's starting to cut me a little slack in that regard, because she knows generally I do take him. Generally, I do take those shitty calls. And she's being a little more giving in that way. But there are still callers, very much so, that really hammer at home that this is a job. And it doesn't matter what I feel about the way they treat me. It does not matter.
What are the things that differentiate a call that you're going to enjoy versus the ones where it feels like work?
Okay, so before I answer that, I want to, like, distinguish, like, enjoy versus enjoy. You know, okay. like calls that I like versus calls that I would jerk off to. The second category, none. There are no calls that I would jerk off to. In terms of calls that I enjoy, that I find pleasant, it's going to be callers who are fairly articulate. That is to say, it's less of a monologue on my part and more of a dialogue. It's more of a conversation. It's going to be calls where they are not sounding furtive or ashamed. That they kind of step into, like, I could hear it in their voice, their enthusiasm, you know? Calls where they clearly, either implicitly or explicitly, are aware of the nature of our relationship. If that makes any sense. Like, if they say, oh, they compliment me, like, you must give really good service to these other guys. Or they'll say, at the end, maybe they'll say, oh, you are so good with these scenes. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas calls that on that kind of spectrum right there, the calls that really I'm not comfortable with are the ones where they think that we should be meeting, or the ones that think clearly that the things that I do with them are things that are true for me. So they don't have a strong sense of, this is a service that you're paying for, and therefore any response that I'm giving you, you can assume that it's I'm acting, but that doesn't mean it's not a good response or that you're not getting enjoyment out of it. The people who don't have that line clear, it's not that I worry about them. It's just, it's kind of weird, and it's kind of weird is all. The people who have that strong sense, who are really aware, like, yes, this is a fantasy, this is playtime, those are the guys that I like.
So when you said that none of the stuff, like, even in the good scenarios, is it stuff that you personally are getting off on? Like, what is that chasm? Is it just that you simply don't have the same thing as the people that call you? Or is there just, like, a really big difference between what, I don't know, is it what men want? Like, what is the difference between what gets you off and what's getting your clients off?
I think the major difference is that I don't know them well enough, and never will, for my what I want to be important. Now, some of them talk a good game about what do you want, but really what they really want to hear is, I want to come for you, and they want me to come like 8 times in 7 minutes, you know, so it's a macho thing. Mm-hmm. What I want is not part of that equation. So there are a few callers whose, shall we say, sphere of interest is a good overlap with mine. And there are in that group even some callers who have nice voices, which is a big turn on for me with phone work, obviously. So there are, I could list off like three guys off the top of my head where I'm like, oh, that's a turn on. I would, you know, if this was something that one of my lovers and I were talking about, I'd be beating it hard. But they don't really care. So that connection of like, it's not in their awareness to care. It's not what they're paying for. You know, mm-hmm. I think the exchange of money puts a damper on that. I think that's part of it. And honestly, I tried once to jack off to a call early on, like within 3 months of starting with one of these guys who I thought was a good overlap. And it's, you just can't do it. If I'm supposed to be providing that service, but I'm like getting close to losing my ability to speak, that's not a good call for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's partly the exchange of money, partly like they don't really give a shit. And it's not that they're being mean. It's just like, that's not why they're calling in.
Are all of your callers male?
Oh, yes.
What is that about?
Because
there's always this idea that, like, you know, people float around these gender norms about, you know, women prefer a narrative, right? They're not as visually interested, which, first of all, isn't true because women respond visually, like, a great deal, actually. But, you know, what is out there isn't necessarily for them. But, like, there's this whole story that, like, women get off on narrative and you know, that, so it seems like it would make more sense to have some sort of, like, intimate, made specifically for you audio porn, but that's not who's calling.
That's not who's calling. They don't call me. I can't say that they never call. I've heard anecdotally that women, other PSOs have taken calls from women. But they definitely don't call me. And I don't know. I think that it would be a mistake to underestimate the influence of economics on the equation, because women generally make less money than men. So there's less disposable income for luxury products like custom audio, you know, porn. But I think the larger issue behind that, this very large divide is women are generally socialized to talk to each other, to talk. We're communicators, right? Mm-hmm. And we're socialized to turn to each other for like emotional support, or turn to, you know, we provide that, but we also ask for that from each other, generally speaking. So the people who are calling in for phone work with me, at least, it's, you know, they're calling in because they can't get what they want right then. And it could be as a prosaic of reason as my wife is away. Normally she's the one who tells me the dirty shit, but oftentimes it's something that they can't ask for. They're afraid to ask for. They're afraid to say what it is. They're afraid to tell their lover that they want to be called Wendy and pegged, right? They're afraid to tell their lover that they really, really like, you know, panties, or that they really like, you know, any number of things. I get a lot of taboo stuff. And men, at least straight men, are not... they don't have a lot of resources. They've been socialized not to talk to each other in any meaningful, intimate way. They occupy a very narrow, small bit of ground on which they can stand and still retain their masculinity. They can't share this shit with each other. They can't talk about it with each other. Women generally have a little more room to move. We have a little more room to breathe, and we talk to each other all the time about sex. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess when you look at the array of outlets that women have to talk about their sexuality versus men, and particularly straight men, women just, we have it better in that regard, I think. Even something so simple as Cosmo sex tips. Well, hell, at least it's out there, right? And it gives you something to react to, even if you're like, that's bullshit, but at least it's out there. You know, men, straight men in particular, will rarely, rarely talk about sex with each other in anything more than like a bragging sort of way. You know, locker room jokes. And so I guess my point is like women tend to have more ways to kind of work out what turns them on. They have more ways to kind of get at those fantasies. We have a lot more erotica out there for us to shop from, even if it's people sometimes like dismiss it, but like it's out there. Men don't have those resources. So what do they have? They have a credit card and they have a phone line they can call. And sometimes I feel a little bad, like I wish they felt like they could talk to their partners, but that's on them, you know, like that's their journey. They have to figure that out. So that's why the divide, I think, that men just have so few resources to talk about their sexuality and their fantasies and their needs and their desires. They have so few resources. And if they don't feel like they have that in their partner, then phone sex is kind of the place.
This is a really interesting, like, response, and absolutely not something I ever would have thought of myself. Like, because from my vantage, most sexual commerce is for men, and most sexualized media is presumably, while it doesn't necessarily cater to every single man's interest, is certainly under the auspices that, like, the male consumer's opinion matters the most. So, like, the images we see in advertising and, you know, on TV and the way that sex is commodified is not for women. And it is not for queer people necessarily. And I think it's really surprising to hear that as your reply, because I kind of feel like actually most things are catering to straight men. And I'm really...
Things. Like, most... images, but who's making those images? Where are those images coming from? Who is generating those images? The stuff that I talk to my callers about is not out there.
Interesting. Okay.
It is not out there.
So what's different? What are you talking about that is being underrepresented?
For starters, 30 to 40% of my calls by volume are looking for, shall we say, homoerotic content. 30 to 40% of my calls by volume.
And they want to be talking to you about, well, and as though you're doing a threesome, or...
It varies. I put a lot of things under that umbrella of talking about dick. It could be specifically with them in a story where I'm just narrating a homoerotic encounter between them and one or more other men.
Okay.
It could be forced bisexuality. It could be cuckolding. It could be what I'm putting in big sarcastic air quotes, shemale situations, because I hate that word. So anytime the fantasy is revolving, like almost literally around someone else's dick, I call that homoerotic, because the focus is on the dick. Mm-hmm. All right. That does not mean that they're gay. It doesn't mean that they're gay identified. It just means they're curious about dick. Right.
Okay.
So that's not really out there in mainstream male sexuality.
Okay.
That idea of appreciating the male body, but not necessarily being gay. Like, women, we can go to burlesque shows and hoot and holler. We can look at other ladies' tits and go, like, damn, nice rack. And no one is going to look sideways at us. Well, I mean, depending on where you say that. But, you know, men can't appreciate each other's bodies. They can't say those jeans look really good on your ass. And if you look the wrong way at a urinal in some bars, that is guaranteed shit kicking or worse. So... there's this curiosity that I'm seeing when I look at, like, the statistics of the sheer, like, the numbers and who's asking for dick from me. That's that curiosity about one's, like, other men's bodies is not dealt with in the media and the pop culture and the consumables that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it is, they can rent gay porn, but, it's not considered, like, part of, like, it's not considered part of like normal, quote, again, sarcastic air quotes, normal sexuality for men. It becomes gay mm-hmm. and therefore highly problematic and charged for a lot of these guys who are calling.
You mentioned like sort of keeping track of the trends of the calls that you get. And this is something that you're going to be talking about in an upcoming like conference.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's this is town a little bit north of London. It's called Loughborough, and they have quite a university there. And one of the women who, well, the founder of Clitorati. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a UK primarily erotica site. Clitorati.
Yeah, we've had her on the show.
Yeah, there you go. So Emily Dubberly, she. When not talking and writing, you know, erotica, she also is very invested in promoting science and science type fairs. And she's organizing the one at Loughborough. And I told her that I was looking to break into the field of thoughtful discussions about sexuality in an academic context. And, you know, bringing my experience, my real world experience in it, as something that is a legitimate foundation for it, right? And she said, oh, we've got this science fair. I would love it if you would do something about phone sex. So that's what it's going to be. I'm doing this whole, like, a 20-minute kind of TED Talk, right? Like, slides and I don't even know. I mean, she's doing a whole, like, day of sexuality meets science kind of things. And I did express to her that psychology is kind of a soft science, so I don't know. But she said, no, it fits in. So I think she's just a very smutty lady and she likes to put that wherever she can. But
I can appreciate that. That's one of my favorite things about people.
Yeah. So that's coming up and I'm looking forward to seeing what the result is there, because there are lots of conferences and like there's a nerd night down in Austin. I don't know if you've heard of that. The places where people get to be thoughtful about normally pretty random things, you know, and sometimes pretty raunchy things. But just because something is really strongly sexually themed, I guess all of my work comes down to God, like, yes, I'm writing about sex all the time and performing about it, but there is so much there. Why would I not go there? I love talking about sex, and there's a lot to be talked about. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to, like, bring that. You know what I'm excited about? I'm excited because people have these ideas about phone sex operators being dumb.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, whether that's because of the way we sound on some of the calls or because of a stigma around sex work and you must not be very smart, otherwise you wouldn't have to do that. Yeah.
Is there like a hierarchy in terms of like, I know that some folks want to place some types of sex work above or below others. Like, do you experience anything like that?
I know that some phone sex operators don't even consider what they do sex work. They don't identify as sex workers. I know that, like, so phone sex is a very privileged kind of sex work. It's anonymous and it's safe, right? So in terms of those spectra, yeah, it's definitely on one extreme. I think in terms of like what people think about sex work, it's higher up a little bit than people who do face to face work or you know, strippers, or it's higher up in some people's mind, but it still gets that stigma. It still gets that like, well, you know, you may not be being, you know, trafficked to like do that, because a lot of people think that escorts must all be like not empowered women in their own right. You may not be being trafficked to do phone sex, but surely you were driven to it by desperation, and or you just not smart enough to get other work. you know.
Which is always an interesting thing, because, I mean, yeah. I've definitely seen, for instance, like, strippers, like, encounter or rebuff that sort of argument by being yeah. like, here's a picture of me with the money I made yesterday. How long did it take you to make rent? You know, so it's yeah. like, who's stupid?
Yeah. You know, like, no, that's right. Where's the cash coming from? Now, phone sex is, for me, it's not a lucrative thing. It's not like I'm rolling in it at all. But you know, it pays my rent. It gives me space and time to write and rehearse that I couldn't get if I worked for 8 to 10 hours a day at a restaurant, for example, or in an office job. You know, my time is my own, except for those 7 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes where I'm talking to somebody about their dick. You know, it's it's not a bad trade-off, and I can wear whatever the fuck I want, you know, which is definitely not a bad trade-off.
You mentioned a little bit about your writing, and part of your tour will be your sidewalk smut, correct? Yes. That writing? Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Oh, sidewalk smut. It's delightful. It is something that I started 4 years ago. Well, 2011. Yeah, 4 years. Going into my fifth year this year. I started it back then at a festival because I was really desperate to meet, like, to get people's attention. It started out as a publicity gimmick, as a promo gimmick. Basically, I set up my manual typewriter on a little TV tray table and put a sign out. It says, "Abrupt erotica, smut while you wait." And then I just start typing. And the typing draws people over. The sign draws people over. And when they come over, if they want to go for it, I interview them for 3 to 4 minutes and then send them off for 15 minutes. And then they come back and I have a half page of double-spaced typewritten custom erotica composed on the fly that they get to take away. I read it to them afterwards, and then I sign it, and they get to take it away. So that's a paid service that I offer all over the place, and it is like a lot of this sex theme work that I started doing. It's not that I started doing it thinking, oh, this is gonna be a really growthful experience for everyone involved, but it actually turned out to be a really growthful experience. It's an amazing way to meet people at festivals. I mean, it remains one of the best promo ideas that I've ever had in terms of becoming visible in these, you know, very chaotic environments. But it also, it's one of those things. We were talking earlier about men not having a lot of room to move in terms of expressing their sexuality. In general, people of all genders have very little room to move in our society. Like, are what we really want and what we really fantasize about and what we talk about and what we want to see or hear. Sexuality has been so commodified in our world. There's not a whole lot of room to attach our true longings to. And what you get with sidewalk smut is you get my undivided attention for that short little interview where I'm asking you, so, do you want to get with a stranger or someone you know? Day or night? Do you like to initiate or do you like someone else to initiate? What kind of sex toys do you use? I am astonished sometimes still that people answer me, because it's such impertinent questions from a stranger. But there is something about having one's true desires listened to that is powerful beyond anything that I ever expected. And every time I do it, every time I set out that typewriter, I feel so honored that people are willing to trust me to take those desires, stir it around in my dirty little mind, and put out something that's just for them. That's the other thing. There's not a whole lot that's customized these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's like mass produced porn. Well, you have amateur porn that you can find on websites, but like mostly it's mass produced. Mostly it's like multiple people are watching this or reading this, and the sidewalk smut, each piece is original and it's yours and it's about what you want. So that's, in short, that's a project that I really, really love. And I do it in all kinds of random places. And people should definitely, like, follow me on Facebook or go find my blog, because I write up my experiences. It's not just the stories themselves that I write, but also, like, what it's like to be out there, literally in the gutter, talking to people about what's in their dirty minds, you know?
That just seems really liberating. Like, it's certainly in my experience, like, when someone finds out what I do,
mm-hmm.
there's a... Usually, the response is, like, I have just literally opened a gate that was locked, and then there's this flood of information, sometimes stuff that they're literally telling me they can't tell their partner of however many years, the person they share every other thing with, they can't share their true sexual thoughts and feelings. But once people are given license to do so, because you exist in this very specific space, like you have a very specific job or whatever, then it's like just finally getting to exhale after having been wearing a corset all day and holding it in and holding it in. And if only, I mean, it's great. I enjoy getting to hear about it, but I wish that they had more outlets. And it's wonderful that, you know, you also were talking about like the being honored by that. And I absolutely feel that way. And I just wish that it wasn't such an honor. And sometimes like just that people could talk about these things freely.
Yeah. I mean, I make some money off of that. I make money off my phone work and my theater work. I would like for my phone work to become more obsolete. I would like for it not to be such a rare, special thing. Mostly because I feel remarkably blessed in my own life with friends and lovers with whom I can talk about any damn thing, you know? And it sounds like you probably have that experience in your own life, that you have people in your intimate network who you can bounce ideas off of, tell the fantasies. Oh, my wet dream last night. Oh, you know, I'd really like to try on those pairs of shoes. You know, like we have people, you and I live in a bubble, a little sex positive, kink positive bubble. And it's at the interface between our world and the world outside that bubble where amazing things can happen, and people can have, they can look into our bubble and say like, oh, it's so nice here. Yeah. And we can look out into that world and say like, fuck, it's so shitty out there. And that, I don't know about you, but for me, like when I, it's like, yeah, I'm a little bit sad, but it just spurs me on to keep doing all the work that I do. Even the phone work, although it's not like as creatively satisfying as the other work, it's like what I want to do is create and hold space for people to be sitting with those thoughts, to be having those conversations either with me or with each other. That is all of my projects, what they're directed at is holding that space and creating those opportunities for people to get comfortable with their sexual selves and talk about it. And that is an honor. And it, sadly, we're not there yet where that's not necessary. I think it'll be a great day, you know, among all the many problems that we as humanity need to solve. Sexuality, I'm not going to say that's not necessarily a luxury thing. Like, sex is a basic, basic need.
I think the thing that comes to mind for me is that, like, on one hand, it could be like, would we make ourselves obsolete? You mentioned mm-hmm. that, like, there would be something, you know, victorious about that. But at the same time, I think that while there is a ton of moralization around eating, absolutely, we have a huge issue with that. There is still, like, people are able to be gourmet about food consumption and talk about the pleasures of it and talk about really cultivating it and skill sets and really recognizing and valuing those who are particularly good at creating food and being really creative about it. And wouldn't it be nice if, now granted, again, they're still moralizing around food, but rather than me being like off, being considered like punk rock for talking about this, instead I'm the, you know, the Jose Garces of the situation, you know, like somebody who's just really into it.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, I'm not saying that everybody has, whatever skill sets you and I possess in our professions is like, not everybody has those. Very few people do. In terms of, the academic mindset, the vocal qualities, the enthusiasm and the sheer breadth of research and experience. Not everyone has that, but I think the bar for sex, enjoyable sex. Okay. First, we need to get over as a society the idea that sex should not be enjoyable. People still, like, there is still that undertone of, like, we shouldn't really be enjoying this. And if we do, there's a problem. There's like, it's, we are sluts, you know? Mm-hmm. I think the defining, how we define good sex, I mean, we don't need to all be marathoners or artists or the gourmet chefs, to use your metaphor. We don't. But I think there's a lot more room for what goes into sex education, what goes into, this is a baseline. This is a good sex life. For people who want sex, this is a good sex life. And part of that has to be more open communication and more honesty within oneself and between partners. And that's still lacking. Like, I would be willing to lose 2/3 of my calls or 1/3 of my call and still be considered an oral sex courtesan and an artist, you know. Sure, we have those gifts. But, like, we as a society could stand more, like, the what goes into basic sex needs to be more. Hmm. You know, there needs to be much more that goes into healthy, good, awesome sex, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Oh.
I got on the soapbox.
Yeah, no, that's where we live. Obviously, you're about to embark on a tour, and the folks who are in North America can't necessarily join that unless they happen to have the freedom to just fly to the UK. But where can people find out more about you? Where can people read all this stuff you're talking about? And if somebody wants to call you, how do they get a hold of you?
I don't give out my business line in a way that can be connected to the name Cameron Moore, because I operate under a different line. It's just, and that whole thing I was saying about, like, phone sex being safe and anonymous, like, if I started doing that, it would not be safe and anonymous. So you cannot get me for business purposes, for phone sex purposes, unless you try dating me and are good at it, then we can talk. But then in terms of the work that I do, the theater work and the sidewalk smut and all the other things that I'm involved in, people really should check out my website, www.cameronmoore, CameronMoore.com. CameronMoore.com. I've got my phone whore blog there. That's where I do a lot of the thinking about, like, what the psychology of phone sex, basically. I've got my tour schedule up there. I've got, like, my books of sidewalk smut for sale. As far as the tour schedule goes, yeah, like, North American listeners aren't going to be able to catch me until September. I will be in Houston in September, Nashville in early October, New Orleans for all of October, either Atlanta or the Baltimore, D.C. area. So I am hitting some stops in North America after I get back from the U.K. People should find my website and also find me on Facebook, just under my name. And if they want to say, like, yeah, I heard you on Timmery's podcast, like, that's the way to go. Hit me up on Facebook. You get all your freshest Cameron Moore info there.
Love it.
Mm.
Beautiful. So I want to thank you so much, Cameron, for talking to us again. You're always a complete blast.
Oh, thank you. God, it's so much fun to talk about this stuff with people who are digging it as hard as I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're all over here jerking off thinking about it. Yeah.
Thanks, Timmery.
Just all the time. Yeah. So thank you so much to Cameron, and thank you all for listening, and have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.